All right, welcome back, Suns fans. This is episode number 6 of the New Era Suns podcast. Today, I am joined by one of our producers, Jacob Billington. Super happy to have you because I think this is the first time you join us. Last time, it was our other producer, Jake, which, you know, kind of gets confusing. But nonetheless, we're very happy. And we also have Brennan Deltzer. He's one of our new writers here at New Era Suns and obviously well-versed with prospects and you know, anything in between. So we're super happy to have you, Brennan. And, you know, you were kind to get a nice guest that we'll have on the podcast a bit later, Grant McKeag. So that's all because of you. And we're super thankful to have him on the podcast. So later we'll have that segment going on. But it is November 26th right now, and it's actually American Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to all our American fellow friends. With American Thanksgiving, it's a bit different here, you know, because obviously if you think of Canadian Thanksgiving, it's a little bit of a distant memory. We have it, you know, a little sooner than that. But American Thanksgiving is also different in the terms that they have some big football games usually. It would have been, you know, a bigger game if Baltimore and Pittsburgh didn't get postponed, but that's another story. So I just want to ask you guys, should the NHL start doing something for Canadian Thanksgiving on Monday? Because usually we don't have anything, but it sort of just brings up the point, you know, we're so used to, you know, being with family, but I think a huge part of American Thanksgiving is having their football. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think like you look at even like World Juniors on Boxing Day, and I don't know about you guys, but there's nothing I like more than like getting together with some of the boys or my family and like watching Canada and USA like play a game against each other to start off that World Junior tournament. And even when they did the Outdoor Classic on January 1st for New Year's Day, like that's always been enjoyable too. So I think it would be awesome. I think it'd be great. I think obviously they'd have to check viewership and make sure that they're getting their numbers, but I mean, like, if they're going to do it like games on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday night anyways, like I think that'd be an awesome way to spend the day off is have some good entertainment and maybe some good rivalries, a good like Battle of Ontario or Battle of Alberta. I think that would get the fans fired right up.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make. Like obviously you have the stadium series coming now that has been more often. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to put more holidays with more games on those days for the when families are together. You mentioned the World Juniors. That's a great example. I know everybody likes to sit down and watch the World Juniors because it's not the NHL, which is kind of different to watch sometimes, but it's the young guys coming up. It's a good way to see them, and I think it's a really great time of year to do it.
Yeah, and you know, it's a time where everybody gets together, right? So, I mean, you share some love of sports in your family. I mean, having a game on those days where you all get together, I think it's really special because sometimes you don't get to do that too often. And I think that's what's so special about the American Thanksgiving. It's such a tradition for them. And I think, you know, we should see that with the NHL a bit more. Obviously, like you guys said, we do have the World Juniors, which I think it's great. And we look forward to it every single year. You know, I think it's a big event for us too. Boxing Day, whatever it might be, to just get together and watch those World Juniors. So I think if we have a little bit of the same scenario with Thanksgiving, well, I think more people are going to, you know, want to watch those games. And even if you make like an outdoor game on Thanksgiving or whatnot, or whatever you can do, I think it just raises, you know, the hype of Thanksgiving overall. And I think many people would enjoy that. I don't know
about you guys, but I find Canadian Thanksgiving so boring. Like I eat turkey and do nothing. Like that's it. Like it's just of all the holidays, like I find there's just not much going on.
Yeah. I get that too.
For sure.
Like right. A lot of my family for Thanksgiving, it's just come on over and have a dinner.
Yeah.
And 2 hours later, let's go home and sleep it off.
Yeah. Pretty much. Fall asleep.
It would be good to have something like the Sunday football or whatever day it lands on.
Just to keep you awake. Just to...
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So next point is Black Friday, boys. Do you have any deals going on? Have you seen anything?
I haven't seen a ton. No. You get the few emails from Fanatics and all that saying we have our 20% off or whatever. But I think nothing out of the ordinary.
Do you I don't know if you guys are fans of Friday beers at all, but I got an email from them this morning saying that they're doing a 20% off sale site wide. So I was pretty excited about that. Other than that, I'm looking at some Christmas gifts. I'm really into board games. Like my family plays not just like Monopoly and those games. We've kind of dug into like a lot of games. I think we've got like 30, 35 in our collection right now. So kind of just keep my eye out on some deals for that. But
that's awesome. Seeing all those deals. And
oh yeah. Well, I'm sure things might pop on shortly. I think we'll see more deals come out. I don't know what I'm going to jump on, but it's definitely something hockey related, maybe a new jersey, because I still haven't got my new Sens jerseys yet. So I want to get the reverse retro. I'm not sure who I'll get on that jersey, but I'm going to get a jersey. I know that. And if it's not for Christmas, then it'll probably be Black Friday.
Who are you leaning towards?
Well, here. So I have a Shabbat Red O Heritage Classic jersey, the one that we recently used as our third jersey. I have one of those from Shabbat, so I think what I'm leaning towards, I'd definitely like to get a Kachuk jersey and a Stutzla jersey, add to my collection. But I think I'm more of a fan of Stutzla, right? So I think long-term, it'd be a safer bet to put Stutzla on my black jersey just because I'll be wearing it way more often.
Yeah.
And for my reverse retro, I think it would just be safe to add Kachuk on there. So that's what I'm going to do, and I think I'll get that done shortly. But, I'm leaning towards that. Just have all three, I think, would be really cool. Maybe a Sanderson one day. Who knows? Batherson, maybe.
That's what I was about to say. I'd like to pick up a Batherson jersey, especially in the reverse retro. That's probably top of my list. The only official jersey I have right now is the Centennial Classic, which has Bobby Ryan's name on it. So.
Oh, yeah.
I love jerseys. Like, I love when you have a player that's not like that. That's a good player that you're a fan of, but he's not necessarily just like the favorite guy on the team.
Yeah, he's not the all-star. He's not not everybody has his jersey.
No.
Yeah. No. Exactly. I mean, I've got a few. So, like I already have the Tkachuk and the Shabbat. Obviously, you still have some old ones too from back in the day. Carlson and Alfredson one, but. I'm kind of thinking the same thing. I'm like, all right, like what kid's coming up that I know is going to make the team and do a good job, but might not be like the all-star just to stand out a bit.
Yeah. All right. I'm also pretty high on a Norris jersey.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty sweet.
Hot take. I like that.
So Jacob, do you want to get a Batherson jersey because he has ties to, Nova Scotia or like,
So he grew up probably less than an hour away from me, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And I've never watched him play in junior or anything. I think he went down to the States for some of his time. I think he's not an all-star. He's not the Sidney Crosby, Nathan MacKinnon, Brad Marchand that we have from here. I think it'd be pretty cool to have one of those smaller guys from around here.
No, it'd be good too. I think Batherson's gonna end up having a great career too, and you often forget that, you know, he's going to be a big piece of our franchise going forward. And it's just crazy to think that we have so many of those players. And sometimes, you know, we don't even think of wanting to get some of their jerseys. But that's a very good call. And I think, you know, it's a safe bet to get a Batherson jersey. And I don't know, for me as a jersey collector or someone, you know, something I aspire to do, I really don't know how much money I'm going to be putting into jerseys because there's so many players I would like to have. So I should probably keep it safe.
It can get dangerous.
For sure.
Jacob, I like that. I like that take. I have a buddy actually that grew up out in Nova Scotia as well. And he went to high school with Drake, and he was telling me that up until they were in like grade 9, grade 10, he was just, he was a tiny kid, was sick at hockey, but he was like 5'3", 5'4", and just like wasn't going anywhere at a higher level just because of his height. And then he said one summer he just blew up, hit a massive growth spurt, and now just no looking back since, I guess. But
yeah, I know a lot of people that also went to high school with him. I don't know him personally, but I have a lot of ties to him. And yeah, they all said the same thing, like just some small guy, and then he just blew up some one day.
But no, you definitely root for him, and he seems like he's a good kid too, just a good Nova Scotia boy. So definitely root for him.
Yeah, and he does train with MacKinnon and Crosby and Marchand, right? So
yeah,
it's nice to see those boys, you know, do something and get together. And I think it's great to have role models like that. Obviously, I mean, it doesn't get better than that for Drake, a young player coming into the league. So I think if he can be anything like any of those players, and he takes anything from them, then we have a real stud with us. And I think he proved it already. But boys, a little bit of news around the NHL. There's a bit of unfortunate news coming from the Islanders. Johnny Boychuk is calling it a career, maybe a bit earlier than anticipated, which is odd because he could have stayed on long-term injury reserve because he did suffer an eye injury last year. So that came a little bit as a surprise, I think, for some people. But I think this will help the Isles in a lot of situations. I think you guys know what I'm talking about. So let's get into it. What do you guys think about that? And how did you react to that news?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just want to go out and say, like, it just kind of goes to show that sometimes life's more important than hockey, right? And Johnny Boychuk, like, I mean, doubt you're listening to this, but we wish you all the best. And I mean, it's too bad. It sucks. Like, your eye's not something that you want to mess around with, and to have the same eye go twice, it's brutal. I mean, for the Islanders organization that's in a cap crunch, that is just waiting to be offer sheeted by by someone for Matt Barzal. It is going to free up quite a bit of space with him on retired, or I don't know how exactly it's going to reflect on their books, but that it's going to open up nearly $9 million next year of money that they can use to sign Matt Barzal, which I think right now in their organization has to be their top priority. Unfortunate circumstances, but I'm sure there's a bit of a silver lining, at least.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Johnny Boychuk is one of those names that I remember being in the NHL as long as I remember being a fan of the NHL.
Yeah.
I think his first season as a full member of the Bruins was 2010, the 09-10 season. And I just remember him being in the game for so long and being such an impactful player on and off the ice. Like, I just have so many memories of just hearing Johnny Boychuk, whether it be him doing something on the ice with his big body or off the ice with his big heart, like doing whatever. He's going to be missed from the game.
Yeah. No, couldn't put it any better. Just such a physical presence, and to play that many games in the NHL, like at that high of a level, there's something to be said about that. Like, not a lot of players can play that many games and be as effective as he was. So, definitely had a hell of a career. But
no, it is unfortunate, and I think obviously you hate to see it, right? But it is the game, and things like that do happen. So it's important to just, you know, realize you shouldn't keep pushing yourself because it is only a game and your life does matter. And you put up a good point there, Brennan. Like you're saying about Matt Barzal, I think that's a huge thing for the Islanders. And I think, you know, if you don't get something done with him and you end up losing Tavares and Matt Barzal within the span of a few years, Islanders fans will not be happy, and I think that just causes a whole lot of problems for them, and you lose two franchise players pretty much. I don't think that's something they can afford, and I think that they're going to do everything they can to get them done.
So that's a really solid point. I'm just looking at their their cap friendly situation right now. So just their cap hit. I was just kind of curious while we're talking. And so they have, what is this? So Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Jordan Eberle, Andrew Ladd, Josh Bailey, JG Pageau, we know him well. They are all locked in until at least 2023, 2024.
For over $5 million.
Yeah, exactly. For $5 million or more, which is, I mean, like, hey, like they've been successful. It's been working for them, but I didn't realize that they're actually in a bit of a pinch in terms of cap. but yeah, kind of just a little tidbit, but
yeah, and I think, you know, if they don't find some cap space, then they're gonna have to move on from guys like Brock Nelson, Anders Lee. One of those guys I think would be the one to get shipped off. They're in a tough situation. I think we've seen teams be in this situation before. You can't keep having like these bad contracts, and they're not necessarily bad. It's just you can't have too many of these big contracts on average players. Like, I don't know. They'll have to do something about it, and I think it might come down to the fact that Brock Nelson or Anders Lee might get traded. We'll see what happens with that, but you know, another point is, you know, we've had a recent signing in the NHL today. Yesterday. It was Mikhail Sergachev, 3x4.8. And Brennan, do you want to tell us a little bit about that? Because I know you kept track of that a little bit.
I mean, what a steal for Tampa Bay. Like, that is just absolutely insane. Like, the fact that this guy, even with COVID and the pandemic, like, the fact that Sergachev is signing for less than $5 million for 3 years. I mean, at the end of that deal, I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the best NHL or NHL defensemen, right? I think that, I mean, like, I sent a couple of messages to my buddies last night after that dealing because the fact that you look at places like Tampa, Florida, even Dallas, that don't have state tax, and how they're able to use that to their advantage. Because for Sergachev, he's only getting taxed 37% on that $4.8 million a year. Where if he were to sign in Ottawa for that contract, it'd be closer to 53%. So basically, if he wanted to have the same take home of $3.2 million after taxes in Ottawa, his cap hit would have to be between $6.8 to $6.9 million, which it just blows my mind in a way, because like, you almost have to wonder if the NHL should restructure their cap scheme to try to reflect that better. Maybe there's something they can do where they can look at net salary instead of gross salary, looking at how much players take home after taxes versus before, because I just feel like it's such an uneven playing field. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I think that the NHL should do something, but it's so hard when the dollar is so different, right, to be able to do something like that. I don't know where they would start in order to fix that. And I think, you know, obviously teams like Florida, Arizona, Vegas, things like that, they have a huge advantage in tax-free states, right? So it's obviously enticing for players to go and want to play there, but also sign in these hot, you know, nice places to play as well. So I think they have a lot of advantages, and you see a lot more players want to go play in those places. I don't know what they can do to make it more fair game, but it's definitely something that they should work on, I think, for sure.
And it's one of those things where, okay, like, let's be honest here. Ottawa doesn't spend to the top of the cap. Hopefully they do within the next, like, coming seasons, when we have all these guys coming up and we're on our run of perennial success. But like, you look at a team like Toronto, and I mean, I'm not a Leaf fan by any means, but they are in such a tough situation, because in order to compete, like, when they sign a guy like John Tavares, if he's making $11 million here, if he were to go to Dallas or somewhere else, I know he was looking at a few other places. I think San Jose was one of them, which actually has a high tax rate. But if he was to go somewhere with a lower tax rate, he could sign for $8 million or between $8 and $9 million, he'd be taking home the same amount as he is at 11. So yeah. I think it's just, it's more for teams like that. Toronto has the money. They can afford to pay players more if need be. But yeah, like unfortunately it does suck for the Leafs. Like it does. Maybe not unfortunately as a Suns fan, but.
And to add to that, if I have a question, if you were a player, are you going to sign the cheaper deal or are you going to sign with Toronto and get all your salary bonuses?
I mean, if I'm taking home the same amount of money at the end of the day, then you know what though? So the only thing with that is let's say Sergachev. Oh, it's going by Grant. Hello, Grant.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Awesome.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your spiel there.
No.
Not a problem. We're happy to have you. So,
okay.
I tend to go on a rant anyway. So.
I hear you.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Good. Any plans for American Thanksgiving? You're going to watch some football, you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Detroit Lions. I don't know. I think I'm going to work.
It sounds a little more exciting than watching the Lions play.
Yeah. I'm doing a Black Friday sale for my site there. So I'm posting a lot of articles the next couple days and trying to drum up some subscriptions and stuff. So I'm going to be pretty busy with that. But I decided to give a little time to you guys. So there you go.
Well, we're very fortunate for that, Grant. Thank you for joining us, obviously.
No worries.
So why don't you let some of the listeners know about these Black Friday deals that you're going to be having going on. So are you posting a lot of things regarding the 2021 draft class, or is it more tailored to players that were part of the 2020 draft class?
Yeah, well, I mean, I there's two parts to my site. Like I cover the Canadians, the Montreal Canadians, and also draft. So I'm doing a bit of both. I posted an article on Caulfield scoring 4 goals this week in the 2 games. Yeah. That seems to be exciting a lot of Habs fans, and an article on Gianni Fairbrother, who's a nice prospect playing in the WHL. But yeah, I'm going to be, I updated my top 10 rankings at this point with so many leagues, especially, the CHL not really getting going yet. I'm not putting a top 30 out yet because it's just, it's not fair to the kids that are playing in the, you'd probably have, it'd be top heavy with European guys and stuff. So, but I am updating my top 10 and I'm going to post an article on why, some guys are in, some guys are out. But the main thing I'm going to be doing in terms of the draft this next couple of days is I've interviewed some NHL scouts and got some really great quotes, comments on, all the guys that they've been scouting. Predominantly by video scouting this year, which is, which is weird, kind of weird, but, they're scouting like I do, I do a lot of video scouting. So they're kind of, they're doing the same thing this year, but, I'm going to post a whole bunch of, quotes from NHL scouts on, a lot of the, the top Euro prospects and some Q guys and some American guys on the site over the next couple of days, and hope that people will take advantage of the big sale. Like I'm offering the draft guide alone, I charge $20. Right now I'm this weekend I'm offering for $20 you get the draft guide and you get the draft coverage for the entire year. So basically the draft coverage is free. So nice. I'm hoping all the draft nicks out there take advantage of this sale and and you know, subscribe and get all the coverage over the next year.
And I can speak for some of those draft interested people and by saying that the $20 is money well spent. I think that I probably got an hour for every dollar that I spent on that guide, because there's just so much content that you put in there, and just, you know, like it, I think like as a fan of prospects or someone that just enjoys watching prospects, it's just being able to see what actual scouts, professional scouts, think of these prospects and think of these players is something that you just can't find anywhere else. You have a lot of people on the internet that want to place their opinions, but seeing these guys that are professionals and what they think, it's just invaluable. So
yeah,
good stuff.
And I just want to ask you, sorry, I'm Nick, and very, very nice to meet you, Grant, but I'd love to know.
Did you say you're naked?
No, my name is Nick.
I'm kidding. Yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, I just want to ask you a little bit about yourself and obviously about recruits. How did it begin, and, you know, how much has it evolved since?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was I scouted for a couple of years with the Habs in, you know, 2008 to 2010. I'd been working with McKean's and got a part time gig with the Canadians when Bob Gainey was the GM, and then when Pierre Gauthier took over, he, you know, Ottawa fans would be a little bit familiar with his penchant for cutting budget costs and stuff. And he, you know, the ghost there decided that, oh, well, we can't pay a guy 10 grand a year to do a full-time, basically I was doing full-time work at a part-time salary, and he just couldn't justify that whatsoever. So anyway, I got my, you know, my scouting position, and there was two or three others that he cut. And he had like a bare bone staff, you know, pro scouting and amateur scouting, because that's just the way Pierre works. You know, he even took cheese, and I don't know, he like pre-game meals and stuff. He couldn't have cheese anymore, and all the, you know, for the all the players and stuff. Like, just, I don't know, almost obsessive with these budget cut things. And so anyway, that's fine. So I went back to McKean's, worked with TSN. I worked with Bob McKenzie. I used to write up his draft profiles for TSN. You know, he'd do the rankings, and I'd provide the profiles. And then they hired Craig Button, and you know, got Craig to do everything, because former GM and all this, and who am I, right? I'm a former part-time scout with the Habs, so, well, you know, well, see you later type thing. So that's fine. Back to McKean's, and you know, was their director of scouting for a decade, and mostly, but you get tired of being paid $400 a month to, it's kind of hard to make a living at it. Yeah. I wanted to try to do this as a, for a living. So I started my own website in 2017, and you know, put out my first draft guide 2017, and started covering the Habs, because it's hard it's such a niche just doing the draft. And I realize there's millions of Habs fans out there, and I followed the Habs since I was four or five, and, you know, self-confessed fan. So you know, combine the two things, and I think I'm finally starting to make enough money to, you know, to be doing this full time and actually earning a living. So put out four draft guides now, and the response has been tremendous of late, and it just keeps growing and building. And I'm hoping, you know, that just continues.
And I think that's well deserved as well, because I think the quality that you give out is definitely well worth a good sum of money. And I think it's important for people to get that expert opinion, and you're well versed in the game and you've been around and you know what you're talking about. So super happy for you, man. And we're going to be big fans of your guys. And I think, you know, Brennan got us all hooked up on that. So I think we'll definitely purchase those in the coming days or the weeks or whatnot, for sure.
Well, the sale's on now, boys. grab it while you can.
Get him. Well, he might run out.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Although that's great. That's quite the resume you put together. And it's great to see that you persevered and you stuck with it, right? Because like you said, when there's times when you're making $400 a month, I'm sure you might have been thinking, oh, maybe there's other things I should be doing. But clearly you have a knack for this and you love it. And we love reading your stuff. So I'm happy that I was able to work out for you.
Good stuff.
The next question I got for you here. So, maybe I'll just tell the listeners a bit. So historically recruits has a pretty strong track record with how many top ranked prospects are actually selected in the first round. So I was looking at it, and in 2020, 11 of your top ranked prospects were taken with the first 12 picks. And you were right about a number of players going higher than other scouting agencies had anticipated. Sanderson, for instance, a lot of people did not have him in the top five. You had him ranked third. I'm just wondering, why do you think your scouting service has been so accurate in terms of which part of the draft these players get selected?
Yeah. 2019, my top 20 guys went in the top 20. So It was, every guy. So that one, I was pretty proud of that, you know. And 11 of the 12 this past year. But, you know, I didn't expect it to be as close this last year because the draft was shortened, you know, and lists were going to be different. NHL lists were going to be a lot different than normal because you just didn't get to scout as much. But I think it's because I, you know, basically how I approach it is I'm, you know, I act as if I'm a NHL GM. And my scouting staff are, you know, NHL scouts, as opposed to maybe an independent service where, you know, they have, I don't know what you like, guys that aren't NHL scouts on their staff. I utilize guys that, you know, are pretty high ranking NHL scouts. Like through the years, I've developed a good network. You know, consider several of them to be good friends, and they don't lie to me. You know, they tell me who they like and why, and they respect, you know, my opinions on it. So we exchange information, and I utilize all of their rankings and their, you know, well, they don't give me their rankings, but I mean, I can figure out, you know, where they like a guy or not, you know, approximately where they would have a guy ranked, and from talking to them, you know, about it throughout the year. And I put together my rankings based on what I see and what they see. So when you're, you know, just like Bob McKenzie, when he does his he polls like 10 NHL scouts, I consider Bob and myself to, you know, If you want to get rankings that are closest to what the NHL teams have for rankings, I think it you know, you look at my rankings and you look at Bob's for the most accurate to what is actually going to go down on draft day, because, you know, we utilize NHL scouts to develop our rankings.
No, that's a great way to round it up. I also wanted to add in there that you also don't censor what comes in on them. No, I'm kidding, but I do love that. You can just tell like the raw authenticity of some of the quotes that come in from scout. It sounds like two guys having a conversation about a kid, right? Like, it's great. Like it really does kind of give like a behind the scenes kind of feel, the way that it reads. So, So yeah, I do love that. And, no, it's great. It's awesome that you've been able to channel all of your networking, all of your ties, everything that you have to be able to bring this, this piece together, for people that, that everyday people can read. So it's great.
Yeah, it sure is.
So Noah, do you have the next question then?
No, I don't.
You don't? No? Okay.
you ask the questions. No.
Sorry.
Yeah, no.
No, I was just waiting on Jacob, but it's all right. Here, I'll ask my next question, because I just wanted to, I'm genuinely curious here, because I did go see quite a few 67s game this year. And in your final rankings, you had Jack Quinn listed at 8 and Marco Rossi listed at 9. So what is it about Quinn's game that you think gave him the edge over Marco Rossi?
And where did they go in the draft?
Yeah, 8-9, right?
Okay. Awesome. Quinn went 8 and Rossi went 9. So yeah. There's your answer.
Yeah.
No. I thought in the second half of the year that Quinn was the better player. First half, I mean, Rossi was fantastic, but, you know, the more games that I went to in the second half of the season, you know, night in, night out, it was Quinn that at the end of the day, when I did my scouting report, was the better player. And, you know, I mean, the improvement curve, you know, just you look at where these guys are going to be 5 years down the road, right? And if a guy's is improving more and more as the season goes on, don't forget 2 years ago he was playing like midget hockey too, right? So yeah. I mean, this kid's development curve is skyrocketing. But you know, best answer I guess I can make to that, there's four reasons why I ranked him ahead: 5'10", 5'11", 6 foot, 6'1".
Yeah.
He's 4 inches taller, right? I mean, you still, at the end of the day, how many centers under 5'9" are top two centers in NHL?
Yeah.
Can you name any?
Well, and Marco's body, like, I mean, he's a beast, right? Like he's trained so much, but it's a really good point that you bring about the development curve, because you do have to wonder, it's like, okay, how much more room is there for him to grow as incredible and dynamic of a player as he is, right? It's just, he can only get so strong. He can only get so big. That's
Quinn's a better skater too.
Yeah. And a lot of people knocked his skating, which I was surprised by.
A lot of people live in Southern Ontario and don't see this kid, you know? I mean, it was the same thing with Konechny. Southern Ontario didn't have a clue, you know, how good this kid was, because they didn't see him. We see these guys, and we, you know, we see it. I mean, Quinn was on the first PK the second half of the year, and Rossi was on the second. Quinn, I went to a game where he must have had the puck 30 friggin' times, like just very smart. Like his sense is underrated. And he knows where to go to shoot the puck. You know, he's not Brett Hull. I'm just saying, like, that type of guy where, you know, he knows where to get, he knows where the spot is for your one timer. You know, he's really smart. He's going to score more goals than Rossi. Rossi may end up on the wing. I mean, is he going to be able to check Barkov? And I mean, he could do it at the junior level, but there were no Alexander Barkovs to play against, you know. I mean, I think if anybody can do it, can become a top two center under 5'9", it's Rossi. But there's still a question there. I mean, there's been a lot you know. I mean, Jack Hughes ended up on the wing, you know, his first year. He couldn't handle this, you know. He's the first overall pick because he's not big enough. Clayton Keller 2 years ago or 3 years ago, you know, picked 7th overall, picked higher than Rossi. He's on the wing because he's not big enough. So, I mean, it's, you know, there's a big difference between being able to do it, being able to check guys at the junior level and being able to check Barkov and Getzlav and, you know, I mean, down the list at the NHL level. So that's why, you know, that's why at the end of the day, I mean, I love Rossi too. I mean, I only ranked him one spot lower than Quinn, you know, but Quinn's a 6'1" guy, better skater, better goal scorer. You know, he's going to be on the wing. You don't know if Rossi's going to be a top two center. Certainly, I don't know that he can be a number one center. I see him being a number two or even or a first line winger at top, right? But Quinn could be a, you know, could play on Eichel's side beside Eichel for years and put up really good numbers. So it was tough. It was really tough to, you know, I think Andre probably thought that Rossi go a little higher. We had lots of conversations.
Yeah.
But when you look at everything, I had to put Quinn. Well, I mean, he's from Cobb and I'm from Renfrew. So, hey, that was that was the tiebreaker.
Did it. I thought he might be going to Ottawa just based on the fact that he's a local boy. And
me too.
Yeah. I mean, I was rooting for it a bit. He is, I think he's going to score a lot of goals in the NHL. And what a fit for him in Buffalo.
I think so, yeah.
So circling back there, you mentioned just talking about Rossi, you brought up development curve. And that's something that I've been myself as a Sens fan, I've been really interested in because I've seen what the Sens, some of their top prospects, like the Alex Formantins and the Drake Bathersons, the Sens of Jake Pinto as well. The Sens did a really good job of kind of identifying like, hey, these players got a lot of room to grow. And they kind of grabbed them. They at the right time. So I guess my question for you is when you're looking at a player, how important is it to consider what that player will turn into? So you're looking at a player 5 years from now, as opposed to where his current game is at, and how much weight do you put into that?
Well, it's a lot different than the NFL, you know. You're drafting 21, 22-year-olds who, you know, are going to be in your lineup that year, you know. Same with the NBA. Like, it's because these kids are 17, 18 years old predominantly, you're projected. Trying to project where they are 3 to 5 years down the road, you know, outside of the superstars, right? The top, the McDavids, you know, that they're going to play right away and contribute right away. But out of the 210 guys that are picked every year, you know, 200 at least you're projecting for 3 to 5 years down the road. So, you know, you want guys that are improving. And I mean, there are, you know, there's always guys that at 16, 17 look great. And, you know, they're already physically mature. So they dominate physically. But you don't really see in their draft year, you know, a large improvement. And you wonder just how much more upside there is there. You know, how much more are they going to improve? Are they already, you know, close to their potential? I mean, nobody does it perfectly. Of course, you know, with kids that are 17, 18 years old, you're guessing to a certain extent, but you try to figure that out. You try to project how good they're going to be in 3 to 5 years and, you know, you draft accordingly.
Now, is that how you felt about Anton Lundell? Did you feel that maybe he didn't have room to keep growing? I've seen that from people where they felt that he's kind of.
Oh, I mean, look, he scored a hat trick, you know.
I know.
You know, well, I mean, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe we didn't project that. I mean, I had scouting friends that didn't have him in the first round, you know.
Yeah.
And I dropped him. I mean, I dropped him a fair bit and probably too much. But, I mean, you can't predict, you know, skating. Like, his skating didn't improve between his 2 years ago and last year.
Yeah.
But it did this year. Well, don't know. You don't know that that's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So that was the concern. He didn't really improve that much. And, well, I guess, you know, that's the toughest part, I think, is with skating is, you know, is it mechanical? Is it physical? Is it something that can be, that a player can fix sometimes they can, sometimes they can't, you know, like you can't fix bone structure, right? For instance, like if a player's, I don't know, the old, you know, the 10 to 2, you know, where the one skate's head, pointed towards 10 o'clock and the other one's pointed towards 2, you can't really fix that, right? Who's a good example of that? Nick Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, in his draft year, it was like, holy frick, I wouldn't draft him in 20th round, you know, because he just, his skating was horrible and it was 10 to 2 and you can't really fix that. But I mean, he improved his skating enough to, well, be part of the Spezza deal anyway. Yeah. But, I mean, but he's still, you know, he's a fringe NHLer, you know, because of his skating. Well, yeah. I mean, and Lundell, again, we'll see. He's, you know, he had a hat trick in an FHL game. They love him in Finland. He's going to play 20 minutes a game, so he's going to get points regardless. They just love him. But will he do it at the NHL level? Well, you know, we'll see. I still think he was picked a little high, but there's one that, you know, was tough. It was tough. I leaned on my NHL scouting contacts with a lot of concern with his skating, and you know, we'll see if they were right, and I was right.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'm gonna go back to kind of the height and the weight kind of effect on the game, and talk about how some of these teams did so much this offseason, getting bigger and stronger. Specifically the Sens, the Leafs, and the Habs. So you got Toronto bringing in Simmons and Thornton, and even picking up Amirov in the draft. You got the Habs picking up Anderson, Edmondson, and drafting Gouley. And we, the Ottawa Senators, brought in Josh Brown, Austin Watson, Eric Gabranson, and even drafting guys like the Sanderson and Greg. So are we going to – how are these rivalries going to be start taking off soon, and how are these players going to affect them?
Yeah, well, I mean, the last two cup wins, the rosters were still pretty big, right? St. Louis had a huge roster, and you know, the NHL finals the last few years, it hasn't been small teams. You know, even you keep hearing, oh, well, it's going the, you know, the league's getting smaller, faster. It's getting faster, but, you know, there's still an emphasis. I mean, preferably you got the speed and the size, right? I mean, it's still tougher to beat a 6'2 mobile defenseman than it is a 5'10 one, you know? It's just, I mean, I played the game a lot of years, and that extra long stick and that reach, you know, if they're mobile, it's almost impossible to get around. So, no, it's still a big part of the game, and you're looking for mobility for sure. But if you got both, that's the ideal mix, right? Size, yeah, skating, exactly. Combo—that's what every scout looks for. Still, you know, it's why Caulfield dropped to 15, and why Rossi wasn't picked top five, you know.
I was just about to mention Caulfield and how his size is likely the biggest part that affected his draft stock.
Sure, yeah. That's why Montreal got him. And, I mean, you know, could end up being a 40-goal scorer. Well, a pick will look pretty good if he, you know, if he does.
But yeah, he's definitely got the
offense. He's still going to have to translate.
Yeah.
He'll have to translate, and a lot of it will have to do with opportunity. If, you know, if he's given a top two line role playing with Suzuki or Kotkaniemi and first power play, he'll likely, you know, succeed.
I think it's funny. I saw some Habs fans were worried at the, like, four games into the season when Caulfield hadn't scored a goal yet. He was 4 assists.
Oh, I was too.
Yeah. I think your concerns kind of went to bed after the four goal game, or what do you think?
Yeah, the four goals in two games. Yeah, that kind of, yeah, that helped. Well, like many goal scorers, like, you just needed one, right? He was starting to grip his stick a little tight, like he's used to scoring a goal every 2 to 3 games at worst, and he'd gone 4, and you could tell, you know, he'd go back to the bench shaking his head and slamming a stick on the, you know, because he didn't score, and that's what he, you know, that's his bread and butter.
Yeah.
So as soon as he got the one, I think I tweeted, I said, well, he'll start, you know, watch him go here now. It was the same with Kotkaniemi playing in Finland. You know, he hadn't scored a goal in 7-8 games. He popped one, and I said, well, watch now. And sure enough, he scored like 3, you know, in a couple of games. So it's a confidence thing a lot of the times, too. You know, you get that first one, and you get that cockiness back, and, you know.
Find your footing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess I'm just gonna circle back here to some Sen stuff. So in the first round, the Sens got Stützle at 3, Sanderson at 5, and Greg at 28. So all three of these guys were ranked higher in your prospects than they were drafted, even if it was Stützle was ranked 2nd and you went 3rd. Which aspect of each of these players' games stood out to you?
Well, you know, there's several aspects with the guys that are ranked top 5. You don't get ranked that high, you know, without having more than one great aspect to your game. Stützle's just, you know, he's dynamic. I think he's got more offensive upside than Byfield. And that's why I had him ranked ahead of him. I'd say, you know, he's like you were mentioning about size. He's actually bigger than Greg. You know, he's like he's 6'1", 200 pounds now. And he's probably going to play at 205, 210, you know. So he's bigger and stronger than a lot of people maybe realize. You know, he's going to be a power forward type to a certain degree, but with all the, you know, with great hands, with great vision, great speed, there aren't really any flaws to his game. So that's why I had him ranked 2nd overall. There's some NHL scouts that told me that they think 5 years down the road that look back and people will say, oh, he should have been picked ahead of Lafreniere. So, you know, there's no one else that they're saying that about from the draft. So huge potential with that kid, and we'll see. But I think the Sens are, you know, have their future top forward is Stützle. Like he'll be the driving force on that team, I believe, down the road. And Sanderson, I mean, all year I argued with, you know, with the backseat or backseat scouts out there, the wannabe scouts that, oh, he's not a top 10 guy, or he's not a top 8 guy, and oh, he's not a top 5 guy. Well, he is, you know. and I mean, just, I really liked when Ottawa grabbed him at 5. I thought that was just a great pick. You know, you don't look at the left defense, right defense and overthink it. Like, you know, you want, like, look at Montreal. They've got Weber and Petrie on the same side, right?
Yeah.
Well, they're their top 2 defensemen. Ideally you want 2 number ones, you know, Two top pairing guys on the top 2 pairs, and that's what they'll have. Like they'll have their top 2 defensemen playing on the top 2 pairs instead of just on the top pair. Because I mean, there's 2. Every team has 2 really good lines. You want, you know, 2 really good defense pairings, and you can throw Shabbat out there one shift and Sanderson the next. You know. That's ideal as far as I'm concerned. And then you figure out who's going to be on the other side. Like that's, you know.
Yeah.
I think back to our 2017 run. We didn't have the greatest defense core, but we split what we had. We split it up. So we had Carlson and Clayson playing first pair, and then we could throw out the second pair instead of having just our top guys on the first pair.
Sure, you know, because it's at the end of the day, you've got at least three defensemen playing 20 minutes, you know,
yeah,
ideally. Yeah. So you've got to have a stud on the second pairing, I think, if you want to compete. So, you know, you don't overemphasize the, well, this, that, you know, I don't know. I mean, Drysdale and Shabbat maybe wasn't necessarily an ideal pairing, you know?
Yeah,
that's right. That who's the defensive anchor there, right? Well,
the nice thing about the Sanderson pick, too, is that if he can go out and go be their shutdown guy, they can throw Shabbat out there and he can really just kind of focus on what he does best, right? This guy's playing 33 minutes right now. It's probably not sustainable. So we're like on the right crazy nights that he had last year. So I think it's just kind of nice to kind of give him that relief and just say like, and you know what, it gives Eric Brandstrom a chance to develop too, because now he doesn't have that pressure to be a defensive player, which isn't his strength. So,
well, yeah, exactly. You know, maybe he ends up playing with Sanderson. Who knows? You know,
yeah.
It's personally, I don't know. I like Thompson more, and we'll see what happens down the road. And you know, maybe even Docker as well. But Brandstrom can play on the third pair and then be a power play specialist. Like, that's a possibility too, right?
So where,
go ahead.
You still like Thompson even after getting a healthy scratch a couple times this year, just the way his plays dropped a little bit?
Oh, I haven't been paying that much attention
to. No, fair enough, but just in general with.
But I mean, you know, 20, what is he, 20 and playing in the men's league? So I still like Thompson. You don't get, you know, there's going to be hiccups every now and then, just like Ylevi in Vancouver, you know, fans are just, oh, what a horrible pick. Just wait, you know, most NHL defensemen aren't, you know, you're looking at 22. You start worrying about it at 22 if they're healthy scratch. It's not at friggin' 20, you know?
Yeah, so, you're right. We get too high on these kids sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, these pro leagues, they want to win now, you know. They're not looking, they don't care about the development of Lassie Thompson. They want to win their hockey games, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, you know, guys playing in the AHL and you start getting frustrated. Oh, how come our high pick isn't playing 15 minutes a game? Well, they want to win the game, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's unfortunate, but I think what you got to do is get Thompson over here, you know, get him playing in the AHL for a year or two and adapting. But I'm not too worried about Thompson. His skating isn't going to, you know, isn't going anywhere. His slap shot isn't going anywhere. You know, those are elite weapons that he has. And you just have to figure out the pro game. It takes a little while for a young guy on defense to do that often. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I still like him more than Brandstrom, but, you know, we'll see. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah. So from this most recent draft, what are your thoughts on our pick, Roby Gervente? Do you think he has the potential to come into Ottawa and be a top six scoring winger someday?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I ranked him, I ranked him back a bit more so because of the, you know, I've got like head scouts telling me that he's a third round pick. So, you know, so I got to listen to these guys, right? They're seeing them live. So, but personally, I liked him top 40, you know, but he ended up, I mean, I take into consideration what my guys, you know, my friends tell me and there are question marks. He's still a little raw, but yeah, certainly he's got the size, skill, potential, you know, to be a, he fills out and the skating gets, keeps improving and, you know, he gets more and more confident. I think, yeah, I think he was a very good pick and, he's got the potential to be a, you know, good sized scoring winger. So maybe 25 plus goal scorer at the NHL level. So, so far he's made that pick look good.
Yeah,
for sure. That 33rd overall, 6'3", yeah, already got 14 points in 17 games.
Well, there you go.
And I think wrote about it in your article too about I think he set the record for most goals as an 18-year-old in that Métis league. I'm pretty sure you touched on which I guess the potential there is just seems really high. So
All right. Well, I just want to ask you, Grant, let's pretend Jake Sanderson was born a few months later and he was eligible for the 2021 draft. Where do you think he would rank compared to the highly touted D prospects that will be available next year?
I hate these questions.
It's our last one. It's our last one.
Yeah, save the worst one for last. Eh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be hard to rank him ahead of Owen Power.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's not 6'5" and blah, blah, blah. He doesn't, you know, putting up the numbers that Power has so far. But after that, you know, he'd be the next guy, I'd say.
Yeah, the next defenseman. I'm thinking too, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well,
hard to put him ahead of Power, though.
Yeah.
Give me that. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Grant. We were very fortunate to have you on this our podcast episode. And you know what? We'll keep track of what you release, and we'll definitely jump on those Black Friday deals, I think, like I said before. But yeah, for sure. If you'd like to come back sometime, we'd love to have you. And we're very fortunate to have learned what you gave us today.
Well, if I see that you purchased the draft coverage, yeah, I'll come back on.
There you go, boy.
Awesome.
Yeah, every email comes through me, so I, you know, just like Santa, it's easy when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
All right, awesome.
Boys.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Grant.
Take care. Okay, all right. Well, that was quite good. And do you guys want to discuss it a little bit? Some of his answers were quite detailed, so we do have a little bit to talk about.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff that he was talking about. I think him talking about the size difference being between Marco and Rossi and Jack Quinn, I think that was a really intriguing piece, just because of how much he emphasized how much it mattered.
And look, we've seen that with guys like Drake Batherson. We've mentioned earlier, used to be a small guy, right? And it wasn't really predicted that he'd develop to the pace that he has. And I think that's why he went so late in the draft, is that people didn't really value his development curve. And look at him now. This guy has grown. He's gained weight. He's gone stronger. And look at him now being such a dominant player. So I think if you look at a guy like Jack Quinn, like he mentioned, which his development curve might just keep getting better and maybe surpass Marco Rossi where it's at right now. I think it makes total sense to take him before a guy like Marco Rossi. So I think he very much clarified his answer there, and I stand with that as well. And it makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, I think the big thing too with Quinn, it's like you got like his rookie season, the year before his draft year, so draft minus one. He had 13 goals, and he followed it up with what over 50 last year, or for his draft season, which like that improvement of nearly 40 goals within a 1 year time frame is crazy. And yeah, like I remember listening to an interview too, and it was before he got drafted, he was talking about how he had never worked out until he was like 16, 17. He was never lifting weights, where Marco Rossi is that kid's a tank. I don't know if you know the, like Instagram or anything, but like he's doing workouts on slack lines that I wouldn't be able to do.
Standing. Oh yeah,
like So yeah, it's true. It's kind of one of those things, where it's like, okay, what's the potential here? And I think I'm hoping that we're seeing that with Roby Urventi too right now. Definitely looks that way.
Nope, you're for sure right, and I like the answer. I'll just touch back on this. I was sort of, you know, I understood the point he was making about Thompson, but it sort of came as a bit of a surprise because I think, you know, a lot of people now are a bit let down by Thompson and what's going on over there at Ilves. But it's good to hear that someone still has faith in him. And I think for a lot of fans nowadays, they write him off because of the numbers he's putting up. But I don't think Lazzi Thompson is supposed to be some super offensive guy who's going to flash and, you know, put up points for your team. He's a shutdown guy. He will, you know, two-way D. He's going to get to, you know, in the corners and battle, and he's going to move the puck up. And I think if you look at his overall game, it's not that bad. And I think Grant made a good point that, you know, he's still high on him for a good reason. So that's good news, I think, for a lot of Sens fans who tend to worry about so many of their prospects. You know, and we'll see what comes of it. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I think what was honestly really refreshing to hear is, like, this is a guy who's been watching players for how long? And what was the one thing that he emphasized there? He said, be patient, stay patient. What is he, 20 years old? And it's the same thing that we see Montreal fans doing it with Caulfield when he hasn't scored a goal in four games. Like, we see it all the time where where fans are so quick to be like, oh, like, when's this prospect arriving? Or, oh, he got healthy scratch, that's the end of his career. But he's 20 years old. He's a defenseman. Defensemen take a while to find their game sometimes. And I watched a couple of his games this year in Liga, and like the one thing that I noticed is that it just feels like his reads on plays aren't quite there. That was kind of like the one takeaway that I saw. And I think really like that kind of just comes with experience. Like, you look at a lot of defensemen who they don't make it to the NHL until they're 23, 24 years old, and they're able to have long careers, but it just takes them that long to be able to kind of develop that mindset and be able to read those plays and just know where they are, know where they're going, know where they need to be. And so it's nice to hear that from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, even talking about like how a healthy scratch, oh, that's the end of the career, just this young kid, whatever. It was amazing last year to see how many people just gave up on Kotkaniemi because he went back to the AHL.
Yeah.
Like, I still think Kotkaniemi is one of the best young guys. He has a lot of skill, and like he got a lot of lashback because he got sent to the AHL. And it'll be good for his development. Like, it'll just make him into a better player.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. And, you know, we might see that with a lot of guys too. And we should never write off players. And I like the fact that he did tell us to be patient. I think that's important to remember. We just expect this progress to just come out of nowhere and just happen based off what we're told, right? But it takes more time for different players. And I think that's important to note. But I did enjoy what he had to say about Jake Sanderson. And we did touch on quite a few things with him. But Brennan, I know you have an article coming out later this week talking about Jake Sanderson. So do you want to just sum it up for us and maybe give our listeners a few ideas of what's to come with that?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I was pretty stoked to hear that he had him right behind Owen Power. I thought he might be a little later in next year. That, like, I was worried he was going to say, oh, you know, and hopefully that can put Sens fans a little bit at ease thinking, oh, well, we could have held off until next year to pick a defenseman because Sanderson really is that good, at least in Grant's eyes. So article that I'm writing right now kind of just touches base on Sanderson and reflects like a lot of the things that Grant kind of already said. So big part of that is that the Sens do kind of have an embarrassment of riches on the blue line right now, or at least coming up in terms of prospects. Like, their cupboards are getting pretty stacked. But at the end of the day, they do not have an embarrassment of riches in regards to a top pairing shutdown defenseman. Just that guy that can go out there every night and can hold off the Matthews, the Marners, the Crosbys, like those guys that are going to be able to block them out. And those players are so coveted by teams. Like it's rarely seen that you're even able to draft a guy, let alone sign a guy in free agency or trade for a guy like that. So just being able to add a guy with that kind of arsenal to his game, like that's a lot of what my article talks about, is just how strong his game is. It also touches quite a bit on his offensive side. And I think that was something that really turned on at the end of last season. And when you look at his stats as a whole, last year, Sanderson's stats were a bit underwhelming. But something to kind of pull from that is that Sanderson actually posted 14 points in his last 13 games. So 14 of his 28 points came in the last 13 games of the year. And then he also went on to win player of the game at the U.S. BioSteel game when he posted 2 points, and he led all of Team USA forwards and defensemen at the Five Nations tournament with 7 points, which I talk about that a bit. And I just think like it really kind of shows that he's really just scratching the surface in terms of his development curve in the offensive aspects of his game, which I think is really exciting. And I don't know if anyone tuned into TSN 1200 last week, but Brad Berry was actually on there talking about how Sanderson will be running one of the power play units at North Dakota. And like, if you don't have offensive ability, you are not going to be a freshman defenseman running a power play unit at one of, if not the top ranked national development like program in North Dakota. Hoping to have that article done later today or Friday, have it published, but really kind of just talks about Sanderson's game, talks about how he was the right fit for the Sens.
Yeah, awesome. And I love to hear, I'd love to see what you have to say about him. And I think, you know, we're all going to read it too. So I think, you know, promoting our articles is very important for us too, because we're not just a podcast platform. We do other things here at New Era Sens, and we did bring in more writers for you guys, and Brennan being one. We're very happy to have you, Brennan, obviously. And I think we have a lot of good things coming for New Era Sens. So I hope you guys all check that out. And so that concludes this episode for our podcast. So stay tuned for the next one. We should have quite a few guests coming on in the coming weeks. We have John Rodenberg from TSN 1200 that's going to join us next week. So stay tuned for that. And thank you for listening. Take care.